2, 3, 4.
I don't know what you would call the relationship, because it doesn't feel like an aunt. It doesn't feel like any relationship I've ever had. It's just different. You know, there's a lot of people out there that can't have kids. But just these sweet, you know, 19-year-old college girls. How does my life ever, how will it ever be anything besides this? Because I just can't even think past this, you know?
We've spoken a lot about the personal impetus that drew Lizzie to Cocoon, but the draw for me was not quite as personal, but it was no less compelling. I've always been interested in stories, and having children is an event that truly bisects your life, dividing it into a distinct before and after. What drew me to this particular story, Natalie's story, is that she has two of these. Two befores, two afters. I'm Valerie Best.
And I'm Lizzie Heiselt. Welcome to Cocoon, Stories of Gestation.
My name is Natalie Clay. I'm married to Joseph Clay. We've been married for 11 years. I think that's right. Yes, 11 years. And we have three kids. Mabel, who is almost 9, Pearl, who's almost 7, and Marlo, who's almost 4.
How are they?
They're great. Marlo is at that age where he's so great or so hard and never anything in between. Today he was kind of hard. But they're great. They're great.
So let's go back in time a little bit.
Okay.
Tell me about being 20.
How far back do you want to go?
20 years old.
20 years old. When I was 20, yeah, I gave birth to twins that I placed for adoption. That was a big year.
That's a big year.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, let's go back to 19.
Okay.
Can you tell me what led up to that decision to place children?
Okay. So I had this boyfriend in high school. And then into college, that it was a pretty unhealthy relationship. I was just crazy about him, and it was just not healthy for a lot of reasons. And anyway, I ended up getting pregnant. I guess you know how that happens. So we'd kind of been talking about getting married, actually. And so it just kind of made sense. Like I told him first, and then we kind of just talked and told my parents that same day, because I was close with my parents, and I just felt like I had to tell them because I was so freaked out and knew that somehow it'd be okay as long as my parents knew and I had their help. And then we told his parents, and he proposed, you know, and asked in.
This was one day.
Yeah, this was a big day. Yeah. And so my old college roommate was in town because it was over Thanksgiving. Was it over Thanksgiving? Yeah, I think it was over Thanksgiving. And it was kind of the perfect setup because there had been an ice storm in Spokane where I grew up. And so we had no power. It was all really cold. Like when we were telling my parents, it's like the fireplace was on downstairs, but there's no heat in the house and it's dark. There's no lights. And anyway.
It was theatrical.
Yeah, yeah. So he proposed and I said yes. And then that night just went to sleep and kind of was chatting with my older sister and my roommate, my college roommate. She's like, okay, I'm getting married and I'm going to have a kid. All right. Okay, we can do this. Let's do this. Like, and so anyway, and then the next day he didn't call all day. And so I kind of figured maybe we're not getting married. Ouch. And I was right. I was right. And so it turned out his parents felt like I was way too emotionally dependent on him, which really I was. I was like totally crazy about him. And that he should move to Seattle and then we shouldn't have any contact. And so that's what he did. And so I was heartbroken. I was super heartbroken. But then after that, you know, my parents were awesome through all this. My whole family was. So they were asking, all right, well, what's your plan? You know, do you think you want to keep the baby? Do you want to, you know, what about adoption, things like that. And I just felt like I need some time to think about this. I don't know yet. And anyway, my dad, he really, I'm pretty close with my dad, and I remember just having some talks with him, like, we'll support you the best we can, and but just kind of helping me really understand what the circumstances might look like if I kept the baby. And so more and more, it just kind of felt like, also, I did this through the adoption through LDS Social Services, and that was a big thing that was taught to me, is that, you know, there's a lot of people out there that can't have kids, and there's this family, you know, they've been sealed, and so if I placed the baby for adoption through this agency, that they'd be sealed to a family. And, you know, in my mind, it was kind of easy to see, like, they'll have this whole life that I always envisioned giving any kid I had that I couldn't offer. And it was also in my mind thinking about the ex-boyfriend, like, it was just not a healthy relationship, and I could just envision that continuing, him coming in and out of the picture, or however that would look. It just didn't seem like a great thing for a kid to be in the mix of. So, you know, a few months in, I decided, yeah, I think adoption's the right thing. And also, like, selfishly, I was, you know, 20, I was a freshman in college, and I wasn't ready to be a mom. And, so I always felt kind of guilty about that, because people would say, oh, it was such an unselfish choice. But I think I found a lot of peace in it, because I felt like, I think this is the best decision for everybody involved. And I did think that for a long time. And so, yeah, so then there ended up being some complications. They found twins.
This was not after you had already chosen to place them for adoption.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did that affect that decision at all?
It didn't. In fact, it made me feel even better about the decision, because I remember driving home being so excited that it was twins, just thinking, okay, no matter what, they will have each other, and they have each other that they look alike, and it just made me feel really happy. I could just envision them at night in their bedroom, like, talking to each other and thinking, because you know, as you talk through things with somebody else, you come to more rational conclusions. So I just liked that they would have each other if any of this was hard for them. But the doctor didn't see a dividing membrane, and so I was young enough, I think I thought, oh, I'm sure everything is fine. And he told me to go to the hospital. Yeah, like, that's not a big deal, right? So they had me go to the hospital the next day for a high-tech ultrasound, as high-tech as it was back in 1997. And there was no dividing membrane, so they were worried they might be conjoined, and worried about all these chromosome abnormalities, which luckily there was none. And luckily they were not conjoined, but they were in the same amniotic sac. And so their cords were, like, all tangled. You know, they do the ultrasound in the red and blue, and you could just see them all tangled. So they couldn't move around a ton in there. And anyway, but they just wanted to keep a close eye on things. But I think that was my first experience with doctors always just kind of laying it out there, like, worst case scenario, like, one might die, or they both might die, or, and, you know, if one dies, you'll just probably keep it in there and then deliver the other. And then anyway, they were just giving me every possible scenario, and I was pretty young and sheltered to that point. So that was hard, just thinking through what is going to happen. And so, but, you know, they had me, I think they were checking me weekly or something by then. And then I went in for an ultrasound, and my amniotic fluid was low, and so they just admitted me to the hospital right there.
After Natalie found out she was pregnant and that she wasn't getting married, she had gone back to school. She didn't care what people thought, and she wanted to go back to college. But as anyone who's been pregnant knows, it's hard. She didn't feel well in the morning and felt even worse at night. So when she went home for Christmas, she stayed there. Months passed, and she learned of the complications. Eventually, she was put on hospital bed rest for 6 weeks. During that time, she spent largely lying on her left side. She also had daily stress tests and was getting steroid injections for the twins. One day, she didn't feel them moving around, and an ultrasound revealed that they were having twin-to-twin transfusion, where they share arteries through the placenta, which, untreated, can be fatal. Natalie immediately underwent a C-section, and her twins, Amy and Aaron, began their month-long hospital stay. And Natalie turned her thoughts again to adoption.
During that time, I'd been reviewing different files, and that was really hard, because even back then, I remember looking at the files thinking, this is no way to choose parents. Like, how, you can't tell anything from facts on a paper. I just remember at the time thinking, this is a ridiculous way to choose a family. But so the only thing I could I kind of went off of was, other than, you know, I just, the normal vetting items, was the mom had a job, like she had been a dental hygienist, that she was still working part-time. So I liked that she could still work if needs be. And they couldn't have kids. And they had a boy who was 3 at the time that they had also adopted. So I liked that they would have a brother. And then I really just went by this letter. Like they had written, the parents had written a letter. Really, it was when the mom wrote a letter, just kind of talking about their family. And just, and I felt like that was the only way I could kind of get a sense of them was through this letter. So I'd chosen them. I'd chosen them right before I found out there was problems.
Even before she knew about the twin-to-twin transfusion, Natalie knew there were some complications with the twins. One of the girls had sacralogenesis, which is a condition where the sacrum doesn't develop. They believed it was a complication from being one of a monoamniotic twin.
She has scoliosis now, and they were worried that she may not ever even sit up, let alone walk. But luckily, she does both those things. And one of them had an extra vertebrae, just some, and rocker bottom feet, you know, club feet. So it was just some complications, and they knew, okay, if we can see this much, we don't know really what we're really dealing with, because this is all we can see on the ultrasound. So at that point, I had narrowed it down to a couple of families, and I asked them to just write one more letter, just explaining that they understood the unique circumstances, because I just wanted to know, like, this is obviously a lot different than they were getting involved in and to begin with. And I was, again, just trying to get a sense for these people. So the family that I chose, she ended up writing another letter, and just, I mean, it was, I ended up choosing them based on this letter. And then it was like the next day that I ended up having them. It was like right before. So I was glad that that was done before I saw them and everything.
Wait, where do you say that?
Well, I think I was worried, like if I didn't have it in my mind that there was this family that I'd chosen, that it would be, once I was spending time with them, it would be too hard to think of anybody else with them, you know? And that was hard. So since they were in the hospital for a month, I lived right up the street, and I knew this family was in Oregon, but that's all I knew. And I just felt like I can't give up my rights as their mother and not be able to see them when they're just right down the street from my house. That's too hard. So I agreed that we could rotate feedings, because we weren't allowed to meet until the very end, until this was all official. But that I'd go to a feeding and they'd go to a feeding, you know, like that until the end. But I wanted to be able to spend that time with them for that month.
As you can imagine, this was a difficult dance for all parties involved. Sometimes Natalie would come in and find the girls dressed by the adoptive parents in little outfits. It made her uncomfortable, and she would put them back into their hospital onesies. The adoptive parents were nervous, which Natalie understood, so she went to court to give up her parental rights. She wanted to demonstrate to the adoptive parents that she wasn't backing out. She just needed this time.
And so I was able to do that, and that was great for me. And I know everybody has a different experience, and I think that's just such a unique thing, and we all cope differently. And just for me, that it was really great for me to be able to have that time with them, because I felt like I got to watch them grow and change even just a little bit. So I felt like I knew them a tiny bit. So anyway, then it comes the hardest part that I still can't even think about without crying, but was the last night in the hospital. You know, it was so tricky, because I'd see them start to do better, and it was these mixed feelings, like I want them to do better, but I also want my time with them, and you know, I was feeling selfish and all this stuff. But anyway, the time finally came, and it was this super sweet night with them, because I would just feed them, and then usually I'd feed one and just and she'd fall asleep, and I'd hold her for a while, and then I'd feed the other and hold her, and she'd, you know, while she slept for a while, and then put her back and then go home. And so this night, it was just a nice night. Like they just weren't crying at all, and I was able to feed them both and excuse me, and just like hold them for the longest time. Like I have these pictures of them, and their faces are just red because I'm sure they're so hot, because I was just holding them and holding them and holding them. But it was just super nice, and I left that night just, I mean, I'll never forget. I feel like everything is so vivid from that night. Like even the nurse that was there, and you know, I'd gotten to know the nurses, and they were crying and I was crying, and it was just hard. So anyway, then I just, it was summertime, so I just went back to my house and just kind of just went to bed. And then the next few days, I was just kind of in a daze. Like, I just remember sitting out on our back porch on this chaise lounge, just like, what? This is so weird. And how will it ever be anything besides this? Because I just can't even think past this, you know? So anyway, as time goes on, you know, that really taught me that, like, just like your body's always physically healing, I feel like it's always emotionally healing too. I think the thing that was surprising about that is, did you want me to keep going like this and just telling you, or did you want to ask anything? Okay. So I think the thing that was surprising to me is, like, I'd have moments where I would just feel like I just cannot go on. Like, it was just so hard and just felt I'm never going to be happy again. And this is the hardest thing I've ever done. And then I would feel kind of bad. Like, I know I'm supposed to just, like, have a good attitude, or just, you know, they're in a better place. And that sounds like they died. Luckily they didn't die, but, you know, like, this was, you know, I just felt like how I'm supposed to feel. And then I'd have days where I would actually feel okay and be thinking about going back to school. And I felt super guilty about that too. Like, I just always felt like, oh, I'm just rotten, however I'm feeling. And someone gave me really good advice during that, just saying, like, however you're feeling is okay. Just let yourself feel what you're feeling. And I remember that helped a lot. And just thinking, okay, I'll have some days where I feel crazy and sad and other days where I feel okay. And both is just kind of part of this process. So, their mom was super nice, and, like, she would, because the agreement to LDS Social Services was that for the first year they would send pictures, and then after that they wouldn't, because they'd become too recognizable. So I'd, like, go scouring Oregon for them or something for these 1 year olds. But, and it wasn't like a set amount of time, but she was really nice and got professional pictures taken of them, like, every few months, and would send them to me. And she'd send me letters and just updates about them and, you know, pictures. I have a photo album. I have all this stuff upstairs. Yeah. And then I went back to college in the fall, and I thought I was totally okay. I thought I was totally fine. Like, okay, back to school. Not that I wasn't sad about it, but I just felt like, I'm a totally normal human being, right? Like, ready for college. And I had crazy anxiety. Like, I remember I went on a date with this guy to see that stupid movie Face Off, but it made me super anxious. I remember coming home everything made me anxious, but it's probably partly hormones and everything else. But the other awesome thing is, I felt like, I don't care who knows this. And I've always kind of felt like that. Like, I don't care what people think, but it was more to the point of, this guy wants to take me on a date. Okay, he needs to know this about me, or else he does not know me. So if you, like, first date, sitting at dinner, like, oh, him asking, what'd you do this summer? I'm like, well, let me tell you. So I didn't get a lot of second dates, I'm going to be honest. And I also remember thinking, well, fine. If that's totally fine. And then I had a therapist who was like, yeah, but you should reserve it for special people. It's not that you're hiding it, but it's just, you got to give people a chance to get to know you. And I always felt like that was so tricky. Like, oh, I'm tricking them, like, trying to get them to like me. Anyway, it makes more sense now. Like, if people haven't had any experience with that, then yeah, give them some chance. By the end of college, I was like, forget this. I'm ready for change and some anonymity. And that's why I moved to New York.
And she loved it. The city itself and the anonymity it provided. During the twins' first year, Natalie and the adoptive parents wrote letters regularly. Then they slowed from both parties.
I would always feel really guilty about that, but, you know, you're just kind of naturally moving on. And I'd always think about them, their birthday's on June 6th, and I'd always think about them on their birthday. And then I remember 1 year being at Estee Lauder. I was working at their headquarters, and it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I remember seeing the date on something, and it was June 6th, and I hadn't thought of it till that moment. And I just felt sick. Like, I went to the bathroom and, like, cried and just felt so bad. Like, I don't want to forget them. And So the letter slowed down and eventually stopped. And then I heard from them, the girls, once out of the blue. They were in seventh grade. I have the letters. They're really cute. And they drew me some pictures and just saying, hi, you know, we just want you to know we're doing really well. And so, and then I wrote them back. I don't even remember what I said, but just because you weren't allowed to tell where you lived, this all went through the agency. And so I just told some things about, oh, I live in a city and I can get my food delivered, which is great because I don't cook and stupid stuff like that. But so that was it. And then right before I left New York, it was like a year before I left New York, I got a letter from one of them, from Amy.
You'll remember the letters between Natalie and the twins all had to go through the adoption agency. Before they sent this one, they called Natalie. The adoptive parents Natalie had chosen had gotten divorced years before, when the girls were in junior high. Both had gotten remarried, though by this time their father was divorced again.
That was really hard to hear, just because, you know, I never, ever pretend that I could have given them any better life. But, you know, it's just hard thinking through them going through all that turmoil and stuff. So, and also because they had separated them, like for high school, the mom moved and one of the girls went with her and the dad stayed where they grew up and Amy lived with him. So that was kind of hard thinking about that. Anyway, but I got her letter and her whole letter sounded really upbeat. Like she's like, I wasn't sure if you knew mom and dad got divorced. And, you know, she was just giving me the rundown of her life. She's like, Aaron and I are still best friends and we still see each other every weekend. And, you know, we're really happy. And she was still sounding really upbeat, but, you know, so it was neat to get that. And then I felt like, okay, I want to respond back, but I honestly didn't know what to say. And they had called me and told me they were sending it, and then like 2 months went by and I still hadn't gotten it, and I called and they said, oh, we forgot to send it. So I felt like, oh my goodness, like by the time I saw the date on her letter when I got it, it was like at least 6 months before. So already I was feeling like I need to say something, I don't know, and I want to say something, but I don't know what to say. But also she thinks I haven't responded for 6 months, and then we were like packing up and moving and it was always on my mind. And that's just a big flaw of mine. Like if I don't know how to handle the situation, I just stress about it all the time and don't do anything about it. I still do that a bunch.
Amy's letter came at a particularly intense time in Natalie's life. After 14 years, she and her family were leaving New York City. They relocated to Utah, where one night she started thinking about social media.
And I actually called the agency and asked them, what's the process? Because I knew they had just turned 18. And so I said, what's the process? And they said, well, you can send us a letter with your information and we can get that to them if you want to contact them, which I thought was good because I didn't want to find them if they weren't ready to be found. But also I was just at that point like, no, I want to find them this second. And so I kind of can't give up when I get that in my head. So I just started typing in their names and Oregon and twins and all this. And I knew like Amy was a runner. So I knew there was just different keywords I could type in. And sure enough, there was a Facebook post by one of their friends. So that night I discovered them. I was up probably the whole entire night till like 4 a.m, just dying, just looking at all these pictures of them. Like, I can't believe this, like, you know, and it was amazing. And they were beautiful and just looked happy. And I mean, you know, it's social media, so you never know for sure what's really going on, but they looked healthy and they looked great. And I mean, it was just crazy, but so fun to see, you know.
Before we go on, a note. If, like me, you were wondering if there was any more to the story of the birth father after he disappeared into the wilds of Seattle, there is.
So when I found out I was having twins, my older brother and I went over to his parents' house. I was like, we should tell her. So I just explained, you know, everything that was going on. And I remember saying that he had been having a really hard time, that he had gotten a job in Seattle at this ice cream parlor, and my sister's old high school boyfriend was the manager there. And as soon as he found out who he was, he fired him because he knew about this whole thing and how that was super hard for him. And I remember thinking like, oh, that's too bad, but not giving a crap because I was so pissed, like with all this other stuff going on. But then she's like, but I will let him know and see what he wants to do about it. And anyway, she didn't let him know. And then he called me because he was pissed about the ice cream job. And so he didn't know any of that stuff. And he was like, I was like, how's it going? Just assuming his mom had talked to him because that was the first time I'd heard from him. And he's like, fine, but I just want to tell you this story about something that happened. I was like, cool, let's hear it. And then I could tell instantly he had no idea what was going on. And so I let him tell his dramatic story about getting fired. And I was like, oh, you done? Basically, like, shut up. So I was like, did your mom tell you I came by the house last night? And he's like, no, what? So anyway, I told him about it. And then he said he wanted to know what was going on from then on. And so I was like, okay, well, anything you want to know, just you let me know. I'm not going to make a big point to call and let you know about stuff. But anytime you want to check in and know what's going on, I'm happy to tell you what's going on. So he would check in sometimes. And then also, like, once they were in the hospital, I saw him one time. I don't remember where I ran into him, but I saw him sometime. And I just said, hey, just so you know, like, you know, they're in the hospital and they're only going to be there for a couple more weeks. If you, no pressure to come see them, but if you want to see them, you know, this is kind of your only chance. And he's like, oh, I don't know. I'll think about it. And then he decided he wanted to go. So there was one day where he came. I brought him down there. And, you know, they were so little. They were just over 3 pounds each when they were born. And so, you know, they, like, forget to breathe and just all those little things. You have to, they just train you, you know, how to, like, how to handle them, basically. And so I remember feeling pretty protective of them because he came in. And so he was holding one. And so I was kind of showing him a couple of things they told me. And I remember him saying, this is so bad that this is what I hang on to. Sorry, I guess I'm still bitter. But he made some comment like, you could hold them all the time. And I was like, yeah, you don't even say, like, don't even. And anyway, and then I remember dropping after that feeding, I dropped him off at home and he just ran inside. And I know it was emotional for him, but I don't know, that was it. And then after I was getting all those pictures, like I had this after... Yeah, it was like at Christmas break or something. I just had this photo album of like recent pictures that their mom would send me, and I'd always just keep it updated with their most recent pictures that I kept in my bag, like everywhere I went. And I remember running into him and saying, I have pictures if you want to see. And he's like, no, like you got to deal with this your way and I've got to deal with it mine, which is totally fair, you know? So anyway, then it was like, he and I would still like call on the phone on occasion. And I just got to this point where, this was when I was in New York, where I remember thinking like, what am I doing still talking to this guy? Like I'm, you know, I still had, obviously still had some feelings for him, or else why would I be talking to him? And it was, had been so good to have all that time to like get over him that I just didn't want to fall back into that again. And so I just thought, okay, like this is going to work now or never. Like, and so I'm not going to return his call if he calls me. And we'll just see what happens. So he called me and left me a message. I didn't return his call. And he called one more time. And that was it. Then he was gone. So I was like, okay, good. I think I made the right choice. I don't think he cared that much. So anyway, that was it. Like I just totally 100% cut off contact from then on. I was like, I need to just move on with my life and not have any contact with him. It was just, and it was good. I needed that. And I'm still glad about that.
Back to May 2016. Natalie has found the girls on social media, but has chosen to go through the adoption agency to pass her information on to the girls. And in case it wasn't clear, she's about to embark upon the second of her two afters.
I just don't want to intrude if they're not interested in being found yet. And then it was like 2 days later, through LinkedIn of all things, I get a message that says, because I had figured out the girls' last names too, and it said that Amy had added me to her LinkedIn group or whatever. And so I was freaking out like, oh, this is Amy. And she didn't send a message or anything. It was just that. And so I thought, well, maybe that's just a little initial contact and maybe she's feeling the same way. So I just immediately wrote her a message through LinkedIn. Like, you know, it was so great to see your name in my inbox. So now it turns out they had been looking for me also on social media, and they knew my maiden name. Their parents had known somehow through the process. You know, you're not supposed to know, but I'm sure it wasn't that hard to figure it out. And so somehow they knew from their dad, I think. I don't know how, but through one of their parents, they knew. They always knew my maiden name and put it together and found my name connected enough places with that. Yeah, so I just sent her like, this, it's so great to hear from you. I hope you're doing well. And I tried not to ask her any questions in case she didn't want to respond, but just to let her know, like, because I even said, like, any contact you're interested in having, I, you know, I'm totally open to any of that. I'm just so excited to even see your name in my inbox, and I hope you're doing well, you know. So anyway, then she wrote right back too and was like, you know, yeah, I'm super excited. I've always wanted to know you and to learn about you. And then, but there's two people, you know, and they could each feel differently. So I just said, how's Erin doing? And she said, oh, she's doing great. I'm like, okay, great. But I didn't ask anything else. I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't know if that was what she wanted me to know about her. Anyway, the whole thing felt really delicate. And, but then we just, I gave her, oh, we talked over LinkedIn a few times, and then it's like, here's my phone number. We can text if you want. Like, it's just more convenient than LinkedIn. And
that was like, was it the most activity your LinkedIn account had ever gotten?
Ever. I've never used LinkedIn ever, but I'm so glad I have it now for that. And so she sent me her number too. I mean, we were both like, I'm like, here's my address. Here's my phone number. Here's my social security number, whatever you want. And we were like, forget all the other social services. We immediately cut them out. And so she sent me her cell phone number and all that stuff too. So then we just started texting, and I mean, it was crazy. So, okay. Then we just kind of both started. I definitely have the trail, the like text trail of how we decided to meet, but I'm sure I brought it up. I can't remember exactly how it came up. Something like, if you ever want to meet, you know, I'm totally open to that. And she was like, yeah, that'd be great. And she threw out a date like in a couple of weeks, like that would work. And so I was like, awesome, let's do it.
Another note. While Natalie did take her therapist's advice and, by the time I met her, had stopped introducing herself with the information that she had placed children for adoption years ago, she was also still very open about it. With her friends, certainly, and also with her children. When her daughter would list the people carried around in Natalie's tummy, herself, her sister Pearl, her brother Marlo, Natalie would remind her that there were two others. Natalie's three children had always known about the girls, known their names, known that they had shared residence in the same small quarters for a time.
And Joseph was awesome about it. And I told my kids, too, that I was going to see them. And they were excited and thought, okay. And, I mean, Joseph was really awesome about it. Like, you know, good luck and super supportive. And so I drove down, and they're at Eastern Oregon University. So that's where Amy was at the time. So I drove down there, and I mean, that drive was like awesome. It was so fun because I was just so excited, like all the things going through my head, playing back through all the history. And I mean, it was nuts, but just, I haven't felt that excited since I was like a kid at Christmas Eve or something.
There's something in like adulthood that would be that excited about.
I can't even think of anything else. And this sounds weird, but I've told them this too. Like the only thing I could compare it to, like our exchanges, is when I'd get a text from her, it'd be like, and like a new boyfriend. Like I was that, like it felt just like that, like so excited. And then, okay, I shouldn't respond back too fast, or, you know, what do I say? I don't want to seem overbearing. Okay. Then Erin came into the picture. She, I think, was a little hesitant at first about meeting, but then she had been going to North Idaho College in Coeur d'Alene, and she was coming up that weekend. That's why Amy suggested May 20th. And so anyway, I did have a little contact with Erin right before that, like, hey, you know, how are you? And she's like, I'm super busy with finals and stuff. So I was trying to just, you know, it's all very, you have to be careful. But I was like, yeah, if it works out for you, it'd be so great to meet you. But if you're not ready for that, like I was just upfront always about that, like, you know, no pressure at all. And she's like, no, that'd be fun. So, okay. So May 20th, I drive into town and I got an Airbnb. And Amy was super sweet. She's like, you can stay at my dorm if you want. And which I was like, oh, bless you. You are so sweet. But I could be a crazy person, you know, and I will just stay at an Airbnb because this, you know, you just don't know how this is going to go. And we'd been texting enough and stuff that I was super confident that it would be great. But I just wanted to be sensitive to, I don't know how any of us are going to feel after meetings. I have nothing to compare this to. Like even now, it feels so unlike anything else I've experienced. So I stayed at this cute little house, and then I just drove down. Oh man, that will be so vivid in my mind forever too. So I drove down to their campus, but I couldn't find her dorms because, you know, campuses are so like, I'm not great with directions, I think. But anyway, it was complicated campus. And so I end up by the library, and I'm like, are you by the library? She's like, no, but we'll come there. So I'm just standing outside in front of their school library, just waiting. And that, I was just, my heart was pounding. Like, at any second, Amy and Aaron are going to pull up here and walk out. And I was dying. So I see them get out of their car, and by the, you know, I'd seen all their social media, so I definitely recognized them right off. And you know, they come over, and we're all just kind of awkward and but excited. Like, I hug them, and I'm like, it's so great to meet you. And I'm like, do you guys want to get some food or something? And they're like, sure. So they get in my car, and I don't know this town at all. And I'm like, you know, I didn't know what else to do but eat, right? Isn't that kind of the obvious thing you can do together? To like, so. I'm like, is there, you know, any restaurants that you guys like? And they're like, we don't care. And they're just these sweet, you know, 19-year-old college girls. And so I'm like, oh, there's Denny's. How about we'll just go to Denny's? And they're like, yeah, sure. I just wanted to show them how classy I was from the beginning. And so I did. And so that we sit down and I'm like, what do you guys want? And they're like, oh, you know, nothing, or because nobody's really hungry. We're all just feeling like it's just a weird, not weird, but just nervous and excited. So I'm like, I'll just order just a bunch of food for the table and, you know, everybody eat whatever they want. And they're like, okay. So, and I'm nervous too. And so I'm trying to think like, okay, what's a good variety? We still joke about this now. I ended up getting like a Belgian waffle, a side of veggies. I think I got like some nachos or something like that. And just the most random mix. And then they got a shake, which is what a normal person would order at Denny's at 4:30 in the afternoon. So I remember none of us like touched any of the food either. And we're talking and like I'm crying and they're talking and the waiter was like, this is so weird. But it was awesome because just from the very, like our very first conversation, we were all like, okay, anything you want to know, I'll tell you anything. And just so we both just asked each other questions and just really got the lowdown on everything. And I asked them every question I've ever wondered about. And it was awesome, but also hard.
So here's what was hard in miniature. When Natalie placed the twins for adoption, it was with the belief, the hope, that she was placing them in a family that could provide stability and safety. When she spoke to Amy and Aaron 19 years later, she found two kind, smart, beautiful, loving girls. But she also found that they had not had the kind of childhood she had envisioned for them. There were periods of grave instability, periods of want and kindness. Natalie is crystal clear that she would never, in a million years, want someone casting judgment on her own flawed parenting. But she acknowledges that hearing those stories from the girls was very, very difficult.
The emotions of this summer, I can't even explain. It's just been like, just like this crazy up and down emotions again. Like, because forever I just felt all this peace about it. Because I felt like, yes, it was the best decision for everyone involved. And again, I am not saying I could have done any better job. I'm not saying any of that. Like, I know the mom tried the best she could. And but it was just not what I'd hoped for them. And also, I just felt like, I am so glad I'm not with having that dude in and out of my life. I'm so glad I'm married to Joseph. I'm so glad I have these other kids now, too. And, you know, the parents got these amazing twin girls. And did everybody kind of win out except for the girls? Like, are they the ones that got the short end of the stick? So I still have a hard time with that, thinking back, like, you know, I chose that for them. And it's not that I made her decisions, but it's one thing when someone's born into a situation where it's difficult, but I chose that situation for them, not knowing, but I still chose it. You just can't get around that, you know? I went down on a Thursday and I left Sunday morning. And so that night, like, they came over to the house where I was staying, and I had brought my scrapbook. I had this huge scrapbook. Like, when I got back to college, that was like my therapy. I had taken 1 billion pictures of them in their isolettes in the NICU, and I'd like scrapbooked the hell out of every picture. And so I just had, I mean, pictures of them physically being born and like everything, and this lovely scrapbook. And so I showed them that, and that was really fun to like watch them go through that. And their hospital bracelets are in there and like all that stuff. And the hair, you know, of course we had to cut off some of their hair that I had to take with me, like anything I could. If they had teeth, I would have taken a teeth. But so that was just fun because it just felt more relaxed there. So that night was just nice. And we just all like could tell, like, we just all want to be in each other's lives, and that was evident. And so I was like, okay, it's going to be awkward for a while, because when you don't have any shared life experience, like, it takes, you have to have that to like get to the point where it's really comfortable. But let's just know that and get through any awkwardness, and just, you know, just keep, we know we all have the same goal in mind, and know that that's what we're still always aiming for. And so it was good. I mean, there was definitely some moments throughout that weekend that it was like, not, we, none of us had anything to say and stuff, but it was awesome. Like, I just felt okay about it, and hopefully they did. I'm sure they were not, it couldn't have been the most comfortable weekend for them. But so Amy showed me her dorm, introduced me to her boyfriend that lives right down the hall. And then,
how did she introduce
me? She's like, oh, we walked past his dorm room on the way to her room. She's like, oh, that's where my boyfriend. Oh, because I'd asked them at dinner if they were dating anyone, and she said John. She's like, that's where John lives. And then when we were just, she had shown me her room and stuff, and then she's like, you want to meet John? I'm like, yeah, why not? Let's do it. So she's like, calls or like texts him, come meet my mom. And so he comes down, and that was hilarious because it was so awkward. Like, you know, I'm standing here like, hi, I'm the birth mom, and he's like, hey, I'm just college boy down the hall. Yeah. And it was just funny. I mean, he seemed nice and everything, but it was pretty quick. And then Amy was like, you can go now, to him, because it was just so awkward. But we were just laughing about it. And then the next night they had this father-daughter dance in Umatilla that they do every year with their dad. And they get dressed up like these really formal dresses. And it's at this community center there. And so Aaron had a dress that she needed hemmed. And so I was like, I'll hem it for you. I was just like, please let me do anything mothering. And so they let me hem it, which was, I didn't tell them how awesome that was for me, because that's weird, but I liked it a lot.
Natalie drove the girls to their dad's house, who was warm and happy to meet her. After the dance, she drove them back to their school. The next day was Sunday, and they said goodbye, and Natalie headed back home to Utah. She said the drive back was hard, processing the emotions of the weekend.
So when I got back here, you know, we started talking a little bit more, and then I really wanted them to meet Joseph and these kids, and they wanted to meet them, and so they drove out here, and it was great. Like, the whole weekend had been going really, really well, and the kids just loved them and just loved getting the attention from them. And then I made this huge mistake, and Joseph and I always are like, man, if we could just go back in time. So the last night that they were here, it had been their birthday not too long ago before they came. And so, like, my old roommate, Melissa, that was there when I found out I was pregnant, and just a few other people that I knew at that time that live around here, people wanted to meet them. And I wanted people to meet them. I was excited. And so I was like, yeah, let's have like a birthday party here for them that night. And so we did. And then, but it was like a bunch of people coming over to see them. And then Mabel is just super sensitive to attention. And it was just so dumb that I didn't think through this, that was just such a bad idea, because she just, ever since then, she's just felt like they've ruined her life. And I mean, she says like every night she thinks about them when she goes to bed, and it's just, and it just makes her so like sad and mad. And they sent a shirt to the kids, and Pearl, out of respect for Mabel, went and peed on it in the backyard, and I mean, all this crazy stuff. So just trying to, like, you know, it's tricky because, again, I don't have any experience for this. I don't have parenting experience on this.
So in a uniquely tricky situation, she did her best. One of Natalie's greatest strengths is her unstinting bravery, and she faced this moment with the same level of courage. She talked to her daughter. She explained there are different kinds of families. She agreed when Mabel insisted that next time they come, she be allowed to stay up late with them. Natalie spoke to Amy and Aaron, who were sympathetic and understood. Mostly, Natalie just gave her time.
So then I did tell her, I wanted to go back down there again. And we had talked about getting together more in the summer. And so I'm like, I really want to go back down there again. And so Joseph and I agreed that we would just tell Mabel I was going to visit my friend in Arizona. I've never lied to them, so I felt really bad, but I also felt like this is the only way to handle this situation right now. So that's what I did. And to this day, she thinks I was in Arizona. So I just drove down for another weekend and stayed with them at their dad's house in Umatilla for the weekend. And that was super fun, because it just felt like we'd had a little more history, and we just stay up at night talking on their bed until super late. And I mean, it was just great. And they're telling me about boys, everything. Like, Erin at the time had just gotten her heart broken. So we were talking all about through this heartbreak. And I mean, I say everything. I guess I don't know, right? If it's everything, but we're pretty candid with each other. Like, I've asked about everything, like if they're sexually active and just everything. And I feel like they're pretty open with me about that stuff. And Erin and I will talk about religion sometimes, just everything.
As for the birth father, after he disappeared after that second call, Natalie never heard from him again until...
So right after I went down and we met, Amy got in touch with him. She contacted him through LinkedIn also. And I actually got a message from him saying, hey, I got this through Facebook. Just like, hey, I got this message from a girl named Amy. She looks to be about 19. I'm just wondering if this is this who I think it is. And I hope you're doing really well or something. And at first I was like, oh my gosh, I got this message from him. Like, but then I was like, oh yeah, that means nothing. And I'm doing nothing about it. Because what's the point of us having any contact other than that would be hurtful to Joseph? And also I have no desire to. And also... I just felt like they're all adults. Everybody can navigate that on their own. And so anyway, so I haven't heard from him again and I didn't respond. But he has taken a real interest. And so first he drove down there to meet them. And that was so weird to me, like, because I just never prepared myself for that part of it. And he had been so absent all along that I was like, and he only lives, when they're in Umatilla, he's only 2.5 hours from them. So he drove down for an afternoon and they had told me he was coming. And that whole afternoon, I was just like a wreck, kind of like just felt uncomfortable, just nervous, like what is going on? And I mean, I'm sure it was some jealousy and just some like injustice and just so many feelings, because I had been so happy being in touch with them that I just felt like he doesn't deserve that. And I mean, it's great, like I want them to have this need fulfilled, but also I don't want him in their lives at all because he was bad news. He was drugs and alcohol and dishonest and so many things that was like, no, just you are not part of this story, you know. But so that was really emotional for me.
Did they tell you what that was like with him?
Yeah. So they called me that night. I told him, I'm like, call me after and tell me, because I'm crazy and I can't play it cool. And so Erin called me and told me all about it. And they sent me a picture. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's just weird.
She deleted the picture. Before they met him, Natalie gave them her opinion. She told them approach this as they would a blind date. Drive themselves, be careful, be cautious. He lives near where they go to school, so he's seen them since. Part of Natalie, she says the part she's proud of, is happy they have another source of support. Another part, though, is crushed. Especially when she found out about the tattoos. She and the twins had discussed getting tattoos together to commemorate finding each other again. Natalie had decided against it, thinking of Mabel, whose feelings were so tender. She had gotten them all matching rings instead. Then she heard that they were thinking about getting tattoos with their birth father. 3 arrows on their forearms. That was hard to hear, but she gave it some thought.
And I already think they already have to navigate between these parents and the exes and all this stuff. I'm like, I don't want to be one more thing they have to navigate. That's exactly right. So I was like, no, totally. Whatever you guys want to do. It's totally their decision and whatever, you know, I just have to get over my crap. So, and I feel like I did process that, like, okay, whatever, on to the next. And I probably just shouldn't hear so much about him and stuff because then I don't care, you know? So it's good. Bottom line is it's good that things are going well there. But yeah, I mean, we got to the point where we were texting like every single day, multiple times a day. They'll send me Snapchats all the time, like not all the time, but you know, once a week or so. And just like, we miss you. Or I got a text from Erin this morning, like, I miss you so much. And so I'm always like, oh, they know I'm insecure. So they're just trying to make me feel good. They're so nice. And I don't want them to feel like I'm needy, but I also love getting their messages because I am needy. So I've told them before, like, I really just feel like you guys are my like total crush. And I'm just trying not to overwhelm you because I'm like so into you guys. And they're like, no, it's okay. It's okay. But they're just nice because it's probably not okay. But I am like crazy. But I tell them that, like, I'm sorry, I am super crazy, but just do your thing. So yeah, that's kind of where it is right now.
What do you know how their mom, so you've met their dad?
Oh yeah. So the last time I was down there, I asked, like, you know, okay, because they told me that their mom was super, the first time I was there, that she was feeling really insecure about us being back in touch, which I could totally understand. And they said, you know, she's just worried, she doesn't want to be judged, and she's just, yeah, and all this. But then I was putting myself in her shoes, like, I would feel the exact same way. Like, oh, it's so easy for you to just come into their life when they're 19, when you haven't dealt with them as teenagers, when you didn't pay for braces, like all this stuff, and just be friends with them. And that would be super annoying, super annoying. And so I sent her a letter just like saying to her, like, you know, just trying to establish some contact. And like, you know, I'm so grateful. I'll always be grateful for how kind you were to me when they were born and all this stuff. And I hope you're doing well and stuff like that. And then she never wrote back. And then when I went down this last time, I asked them, you know, do you think we should meet? Because I kind of wanted to get, I wanted to meet her just to like move past that, so it's not just this looming thing. And they're like, yeah, she said she's not ready yet. And so anyway, then one day Aaron's at work and Amy gets a text from her mom saying she's on her way to Umatilla. And she's like, oh, do you want to meet Natalie? And she's like, that was the point. That's what her text said. That was the point. So she's like, do you want to meet her? I'm like, let's do it. So we went and met at Dee's restaurant. And I was pretty nervous to meet her. And because she kept saying to me, like, don't worry, I don't think she'll be mean. But if she does, just don't even worry about it. Like, she's just, that's kind of her personality. Like, she doesn't have much of a filter. And I'm like, okay. So anyway, so I just spend the whole time like just trying to ask her questions about her, her job, her husband. And, you know, she's telling me about how it was so hard having twins. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm not going to say sorry, but okay, yeah, I'm sure it was. And how she didn't have any support and except her mom. And okay, but, and all of it was like, okay, I can understand, you know, this is just her reality. And then this pissed me off though. She started saying, she said, you know, I knew I was going to get those girls. I knew I was going to get them. I'm like, oh, really? How's that? And she's like, I just knew it. And when you asked for that second letter, I thought, I don't have to write this letter. I knew I was getting them, but I'll write it. So I wrote that letter. And she's like, but even anytime I'd write you a letter, it made me feel super resentful of you. Like, oh, I'm the grandma and I'm just giving you the updates because you're the mom. And it would just make me super resentful, anything I ever sent to you. And so it was just so different from what I'd always imagined. And I just thought, wow, okay, wow, just wow, you know, like, just, I don't know, so such a different person than I had envisioned this whole time and just the whole circumstances. And I mean, to her credit, she was being super honest. And I mean, she was just being open. And she said, you know, this is hard for me. And I'm like, yeah, I totally get that. And I really appreciate you coming here to meet. And I promise I'm not coming down here to try to like divide you guys. It's just exciting for me to meet them again. And the fact that they want to have contact and I want to have contact has been exciting. And, but if there's anything I can do to support you, you know, I want to do that. And like, I'm not trying to undermine you. And
listening back to our interview, I was surprised at how much I pushed Natalie to label her relationship with the girls. I asked her a few times, how would she define it? Mother, favorite aunt, sister? I think what I wanted was a way to contextualize this in a way I could understand it. But that isn't what this is. She wants to be a part of their lives. She thinks of them as her children. They call her mama, as her other three children do. But she also realizes that this relationship doesn't have a label. Or not one that any of us know. But she doesn't care. She said she spent so much time feeling badly about things, about getting pregnant, about placing the twins for adoption. She always hoped she'd meet them, but wasn't sure she would. She had mourned their loss like a death. And then, all of a sudden, they were back. These two beautiful girls back in her life. And it was better than she had hoped. Sometimes she still feels badly about Mabel and her struggle with this change. But she reminds herself that she'll do her very best for everyone, but that she's going to enjoy this unexpected gift.
I mean, I definitely feel like they're my daughters, but it's so different that I think it's just going to be whatever it is. Like, it's going to be unique based on our three unique personalities, and it'll probably be different at different stages of life when, you know, right, I feel really lucky that we're in touch now because think it'd be different if they were married with kids and life's just busier and it might be harder to get to know each other so well. So I feel like I do want to take advantage of this time when they're interested in it and they have the time. I just totally want to take advantage of that and just, I want to be a support to them in any way I can. And I don't know, I just like feel like I just really care about them and I just want to know what's going on in their life. And yeah, I don't know what you would call the relationship because it doesn't feel like an aunt. It doesn't feel like any relationship I've ever had. It's just different.
Sometimes during these interviews, Lizzie and I know the story going in. Or to put it more accurately, we think we know the story. This story seemed extraordinary, but pretty straightforward from a narrative standpoint. It was a happy story. But during the course of our interview, I realized this story was far, far less simplistic than it had looked from the outside. And yet, despite all these complications, thorny, difficult complications, Natalie was overwhelmingly happy.
But it's awesome. But it just feels like, who gets this? Who gets two 19-year-olds back in their life that actually want to have a relationship? Like, it just feels super lucky, you know? So it's awesome.
I mean, it's just what I've seen, like, I think that you post on social media. They seem really lovely girls.
Yeah, they are great. They are really sweet. We talk enough, and I feel like anytime we have any contact, then we just talk more after that. And I just feel like it's, I mean, it's been now since May. What, how many months is that? It's October. So it just feels like it just gets more and more all the time that I just don't see it going away for sure. And I think, like, I definitely don't want them to feel any pressure from me. And I've said this all along, like, you know, at any point, if this is too much for you or if you don't want contact, and but it just the exchange is natural enough. Like, it's not awkward anymore. When I was down there and we were just sitting up talking, like, it just feels totally natural, at least to me. And so, and when we talk enough, like on text and we FaceTime all the time, that I just don't see it going away. And I don't want it to. And I mean, I guess I should be okay if it does, because that would mean they didn't need it. But I don't want it to. I love just knowing what's going on in their life. And so, yeah. Yeah, I definitely feel like it's just the beginning. They may move out here after college. They've talked about that. And who knows at that point. Yeah. But that would be amazing to live by them and to, like, really get to spend a lot of FaceTime with them. I would love nothing more. It'd be amazing.
We wish life were easy. We wish that decisions were black and white and it was always clear which was the right choice to make. As we get older, we see how impossible this hope is, that there are almost exclusively shades of gray. Amy and Aaron's father once asked Natalie if, knowing what she knew now, she would make the same decisions. But she said it didn't matter, that there's no changing the past, so there's no point in entertaining it. And Natalie is happy, right in the here and now.
But so far, it's just been great. I mean, it feels like definitely one of the biggest blessings of my whole life, like being back in touch with them. Like, I was like, I don't even need to eat junk food anymore. I'm just on this, like, all these endorphins on this high from, like, having this relationship. It's so weird. I can't explain it.
I mean, but that's it. Like, it's love, right? You're in love.
Totally. I'm in love with them. I've told them that too. See, I am crazy with them. I'm totally in love with you guys. But don't be scared.
As soon as I saw the Instagram photos Natalie posted in the flattering light of that Oregon Denny's, I knew I wanted to hear her story. Seeing these pictures felt like reading the end to a story you'd been really invested in. It felt rewarding in a tidy, final way. But during the course of our interview, I realized that, of course, the story wasn't at all tidy. It was vast and sprawling and happy and sometimes hard. But more than that, I realized that this wasn't the end of the story. It was the beginning.
Many, many thanks to Natalie for sharing her exceptional story with us. Thanks to Ben Howell and Ellen Barnhart for the music, and to producer emeritus Ryan Barnhart. And thanks to Micah, who totally boxed a kangaroo. Thanks to you all for listening and sharing our stories with your friends. Rate us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and join in the conversation.